Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. This November, Californians will decide whether to legalize the recreational use of marijuana for adults over the age of 21. Polls show support for the measure hovering around 55%. If Prop 64 passes, how will it impact us in California? How much new revenue will be raised from taxing these sales? Will we soon see ads for edibles and other cannabis products on TV? Will more people start using? Will we have more impaired drivers on the road? Will the passage of Prop 64 put the illegal pot trade out of business in California, or will it expand alongside the new marketplace? To help us answer these and many other questions, we have with us a panel of experts on this topic. Joining us in the studio tonight is Patrick Murphy, Director of Research and Senior Fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California and co-author of the Institute's April 2016 report entitled Regulating Marijuana in California. Welcome, Patrick.
Happy to be here.
And joining us by phone is Andrew Acosta, representing the No on 64 campaign. Andrew is the founder and president of Acosta Consulting, with over 20 years of experience in issue advocacy, campaign management, and public relations. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you, Ethan.
And also joining us by phone is Jason Kinney, representing the Yes on 64 campaign. Jason is a principal at California Strategies and has been named by Capital Weekly as one of the top 100 most powerful political players in California. He most recently served as lead strategist for the Gavin Newsom for Lieutenant Governor campaign. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
And we will be inviting you, our listeners, to join our conversation later in the hour by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on our website, kalw.org. So, Patrick, let's start with you. Tell us, just in broad strokes, what exactly will Prop 64 do?
Prop 64 will make it no longer illegal for an adult to have marijuana, adult being defined as over the age of 21. It sets up some regulations in terms of who can participate in sales and distribution, puts limits on a variety of different pieces of that, and also taxes those sales and will generate quite a bit of revenue for the state as a result.
And Jason Kinney, since you represent the Yes on 64 campaign, why do you think this is a good idea?
Well, you don't have to be pro marijuana to be pro Prop 64. I think every expert and certainly reasonable minds and every public poll seems to be trending in the direction of the notion that prohibition doesn't work. It's a failed and costly system, and even in California today, we have thousands of felony marijuana only non-violent arrests happening on our streets. The costs to the state for that, for a drug or a substance that even the President of the United States has said is less harmful than alcohol, has been estimated by the independent legislative analyst of being in the tens of millions of dollars for costs for arrests, prosecution, and incarceration of those crimes. And so just that by itself is a good reason for creating a safe legal regulatory structure. But at the same time, California also is, marijuana is also a billion-dollar illicit industry in California. This isn't a binary choice between marijuana or no marijuana. It's whether we want to have an illicit, unregulated, unoverseen market, or we want to actually put in strict controls so that we know who's using, who's buying, who's selling, and making sure that we're protecting those who shouldn't be anywhere near this product. And that's why Prop 64 is so important.
And now, Andrew Acosta, you represent the No on 64 campaign. What's your response to these points? Why do you think this proposition is a bad idea?
Well, I think Jason hits a lot of points that I probably wouldn't argue with, but unfortunately, the initiative before us is not just a concept of legalization. It's 62 pages. It changes or adds 100 laws to the books here in California. And there's quite a few of these pieces that are really geared for folks to make money off the marijuana industry, which really is different than what Jason's talking about. And I think when you look at some of the pieces of the initiative, they really are perplexing why they would allow the home delivery of marijuana, which is not allowed in Colorado or Washington, on the recreational side. And you know, some of these things are pieces that I think most people would, even if they do support legalization, would be concerned about where this ends up going in 3 to 4 years. And Colorado is still trying to work out their system. They've called for, their law enforcement's called for a timeout because they've had over 80 new laws introduced to try to fix or regulate different pieces of it. They have an interim study session that's now in progress to see if marijuana is working out as they'd hoped. And, you know, I think there is this rush that California needs to be the tipping point, but we just passed a package of bills to regulate medical marijuana. Those need to get into place and get the regulations set and working before we dump this giant initiative that really would allow some of the business groups to make a lot of money on top of it.
So let's try to talk about exactly how we're going to implement this, because there have to be a lot of regulations that are going to flow from this initiative. And Patrick Murphy, I'd like to start with you at the Public Policy Institute of California. How, in terms of the taxation issue, for example, how will marijuana be taxed?
So right now the bill would propose a 15% excise tax, which would happen at the point of sale, and that would be collected. You'd also have sales tax on top of it. And then local jurisdictions would be allowed to decide whether or not they wanted to add as well. And so there's also some provisions for taxing a little bit further up in the production chain. Basically, it would be collected by the Board of Equalization like a lot of other taxes. I think of it not unlike the way in which we tax tobacco, collect taxes on alcohol, things like that.
And Jason Kinney, on the subject of taxation, so those dollars are going to be collected by the Board of Equalization. Are they going to go into the general fund, or are they designated for a particular use?
No, this is one of the lessons we learned from other states about what works and what doesn't. And also in both talking to experts, the Blue Ribbon Commission in California, as well as generally what the public wants, which is they didn't want to see this revenue go into a general fund situation. What they wanted was them to go to programs, underfunded programs that have a causal connection or some kind of relation, underfunded programs that we need more of, and that will offset some of the burdens of what is already a billion-dollar industry in California. And so what the programs do, first of all, the measure, Prop 64, pays for itself. So on the implementation and enforcement side, every one of those dollars comes off the top in terms of how much it's going to cost to actually make sure this measure goes through. Second, one of the lessons we learned in Colorado and Washington is people need to immediately be able to understand what's legal, what's not legal, how the system's going to work, how to operate safely and properly, how to keep this away from kids. And so there's a public education campaign immediately that goes into effect. And then there's a series of programs that get funded. There is youth prevention, education, treatment programs. There's underfunded after-school programs. There's law enforcement programs. Money goes to California Highway Patrol to develop protocol relating to impaired driving. Our measure, Prop 64, maintains the same tough standards related to impaired driving as a result of marijuana, but there is no clear set standard for how law enforcement is supposed to interpret impaired driving, and they don't have the training and technology we need. And remember, right now we have drivers right now operating impaired by all sorts of substances. We want our law enforcement to be the best trained, best equipped law enforcement team anywhere in the country in terms of evaluating impaired driving. We also have environmental cleanup because of the damage done by illegal grows all across our state, water diversion enforcement, and then we have job trainings for the communities and communities of color that have been disproportionately impacted by the failed war on marijuana.
And Andrew, as a representative of the No on 64 campaign, what's your response to this taxation plan? Do you see challenges? Do you see any reasons for concern around how the measure is set up in this respect?
Well, I think there's clearly people have looked at Colorado, and there's been locals in California who have said, hey, this is going to be a great grab for us. We can make more money and put more money into the local coffers. And I think most people have said, don't do that. Increasing the taxes locally just drive up the cost and make it cost prohibitive, and people go buy it somewhere else cheaper, either on the black market or in some other locale. So, you know, that part needs to probably work itself out. And as I said, Colorado's still trying to figure out if they've hit the right mark. But on the pieces of some of the money, the law enforcement folks and you know, CHP and police chiefs are all opposed to this because, number one,
CHP isn't, but the California Highway Patrol is. Just to be clear, the highway patrolmen are. I'm just making that clear. Sorry, Andrew. Go ahead.
So the folks who pull people over, who are trained to do this, have real concerns because there are no tests available. So, you know, I know money's been put in the state budget to try to figure out a way to do some testing, but we had this fight in court over ballot arguments. The jury's out on some of these things. We've seen increased fatalities in other states. And this is, again, part of this rush of, do we need to do it now or do we want to do it right? And I think that's really what we should be looking at is, we have other states, including, you know, the governor of Colorado said, give this a year or two to work itself out. And I would think we'd want to follow their lead on this.
And Jason Kinney, on this subject of taxation, just a follow-up for you. If a local jurisdiction were to ban the sale of marijuana in their area, do they still get to participate in getting the tax revenue benefits and having those revenues spent in their jurisdiction?
In some cases, yes. The youth programs, yes. Not the local law enforcement dollars, which are supposed to be used specifically for those jurisdictions that are dealing with implementing the provisions of the commercial activity. If a county effectively bans, which will be their right because we've gone to great lengths to protect county and city control over what goes on within their own jurisdictions. But if they effectively ban, they won't have the need, and therefore won't have availability for the resources. They'll go to the jurisdictions that are.
Mm-hmm. But that's not. I mean, there'll still be a need because people will still be allowed to have personal grows in their home, anywhere, next to a school, a daycare center. And talking to law enforcement, you know, if they're capped at having six plants, if they're growing 16, who's going to come by and count? You know, and that's what you've seen in Colorado is the ability for folks to do grows and send it out to other states. And that has not gone away, and it won't go away under this initiative.
Well, hold on. No one can grow. Hold on. Under this measure, under Prop 64, it will be illegal to be able to sell or to attempt to sell any of your personal activity. And by the way, this is all under lock and key, away from children in the privacy of your own home. There's no public consumption under Prop 64. But it is fundamentally, this is legalizing marijuana, personal use of marijuana. You can use and cultivate in the privacy of your own home, behind lock and key, away from children, not dissimilar to what we have with alcohol. I mean, using the argument of it's going to be near schools, we effectively banned commercial activity around daycare centers, schools, and
no,
the like.
No law enforcement officer is going to go door to door and count if you have six plants growing. It's just not real. So if someone has more than six, they have 60, and it becomes a problem, then it's a problem for that local area, and they get no money, no grant money. They're eligible for no grant money because they banned it, but it still becomes a problem. So if someone's doing something illegal, and Jason likes to use this term about the felony marijuana arrests, well, a felony is still going to be a felony. If someone's driving down the street with 16 pounds of marijuana and a gun and they get arrested, they're still going to get in trouble.
Hold on.
Well, let me just let Patrick jump in here. I appreciate the back and forth. Patrick, what's your thought on this issue?
Just almost a point of clarification, which doesn't sort of support one or the other, but Washington State actually banned home grows in part to kind of close this loophole of the notion that if somebody has 6 or 16 or whatever, they shouldn't have it. At the same time, I don't believe Washington police are going door-to-door to see if people are growing marijuana or not, but at least it gives them the ability to enforce it.
Mm-hmm. And we should point out that selling across state lines is still a felony with or without Proposition 64. Well, I want to talk about another issue related to how we're going to implement all of this, and I appreciate all the input on the taxation types of issues that are raised. But we can't ignore the fact that while California and 23 other states have legalized marijuana for medical use, it's still illegal under federal law, and it's listed as a Schedule I drug. But according to your report, Patrick, if the legalization measures on ballots all over the country pass this fall, 58% of the population of America is going to be living in places where it's considered legal at the state level. So how will the federal government handle the enforcement of the Controlled Substances Act?
So it's a rather unique situation that I don't think we have anything comparable in any other place. Right now, the enforcement by the federal government, the policy is to not enforce. And that's on the basis of some memos that have been written. And they are exactly that, memos from sort of Deputy Attorney General and Deputy Treasury. It's not even the Attorney General or the Secretary of the Treasury writing them. A new president could certainly, with a new administration, rescind those. There's also a non-enforcement provision in a bit of budget language, which is an annual piece of legislation that comes out in the appropriations language. So it's a rather thin veneer of non-enforcement. The one indication, we were waiting on the DEA to see if they were supposed to make a decision about recommending to reschedule marijuana, which could have been used as an indicator that maybe institutionally there would be a shift. And DEA just recently came out and said, no, they won't reschedule, which, if nothing else, gives you an indication of how much DEA really dislikes marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And Jason, since you're advocating that California voters approve this initiative that create this conflict with federal law, what do you foresee as how this is going to play out at the federal level? And should this give voters pause about legalizing something?
I don't think so. I think the reverse is true. The federal government essentially, since 2013, the Obama administration has essentially invited states to take a leadership role. The Department of Justice issued a very clear memo saying that if states meet certain criteria, such as preventing distribution of minors, preventing revenue from the sale of marijuana from going to criminal enterprises, preventing diversion to other states, a whole series of criteria, that states would be allowed to set their own rules. And the federal government wouldn't be spending unnecessary money trying to enforce those rules. And Prop 64, if you look at that criteria list, meets every one of those standards. But I'd make an even further argument, which is the DEA decision, which was disappointing to so many people and really runs counter to kind of common sense, underscores the fact that states do need to take a leadership role. This is one of those issues, like healthcare reform, like marriage equality, where the states have to push the edge of the envelope and have forced the federal government to sort of evaluate sort of 40 years of bad laws and force them to make a change. And by the way, that's exactly what's happening at the congressional level. There are bipartisan committees meeting to address this at the federal level, the banking piece, the insurance piece, Democrats and Republicans coming together. But they're only doing that because they're being pushed at the state level. And California has the chance to make the biggest statement of all with Prop 64 this November.
And Andrew, speaking for the No on 64 campaign, what do you make of this tension that's going to be here if this measure passes between the federal laws and the state law if it becomes law?
Well, the legislature clearly has a role. They took a leadership role with stakeholders to regulate and reform medical marijuana. I think they could play a role in this, and it would probably be a better way to do it than do it through an initiative that has carve-outs for big business and pick some winners in the overall initiative process. And that's really what this initiative is. And instead of doing it the way they did it with medical marijuana, allowing those regulations to play out and work themselves out, they want to drop this initiative on top of it, and it's going to create chaos.
So one of the issues I want to talk about in terms of how we're going to regulate this and how this industry might grow if this becomes part of the law here is what's going to happen to small growers? Are they going to get pushed out by bigger players like we saw in the tobacco industry? And Patrick Murphy, I wanted to get your take on that. Is that something that we have to worry about? I remember in the last ballot initiative, I think in 2010, a lot of people in southern Humboldt County, where they grow a lot of marijuana, voted against it, at least is my understanding, because they were worried that they were going to get pushed out by some of these big players.
The law or the proposition as it exists right now has some provisions for protecting sort of micro size craft production, if you will. When we wrote our report, we did say that was less of a concern, in part because we were hard pressed to find other industries where we step in and make provisions for scale or size. I use the example of when I was doing my graduate work in Wisconsin. Family farmer, family dairy herds were about 50 head of cows, and they were able to make a living. And towards the end of my work there, they weren't able to. Why? Because herds in California were 300 head. I mean, this is not dissimilar, and it's rare that we step in and sort of try to protect those. This current legislation, though, does, and or at least the proposal does, and has some protections, at least for a period of time.
So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're talking about Prop 64, the measure on this November's ballot to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in California for those over 21. Do you think legalizing the recreational use of pot is a good idea or a terrible idea? Why? What do you think the impacts of legalization might be? How would it affect your life or your family or workplace or community? Bring us your questions or comments on our program. The number to call to join this conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org, or you can follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So, Jason Kinney, I wanted to go to you on this question of what's going to happen to some of the smaller growers, and specifically with this issue of the black market, and if you think some of these growers, or just in general, this kind of initiative might either do away with the black market by legalizing it, or might actually not solve that problem if depending on pricing and how the implementation plays out with this measure.
Yeah, two different issues there, but on the black market side, I don't think there's a credible expert that has looked at this and doesn't agree that there will be a decrease in the black market stranglehold that Mexican cartels and others have had over the marketplace for a long time. That's part of the compelling reason for passing Prop 64, is reducing the black market. Every person, even people who are opposed to the measure, agrees that there will be a price that Prop 64 will have a downward pressure on the price of adult use marijuana, as well as medical marijuana, by the way, and that will in and of itself create a situation where it is less attractive for people to break the law to go out and sell this product. But in terms of small growers, we were just in Humboldt County a couple of weeks ago, and that's a place where this is, this issue is so deeply tied and embedded into the culture and economy of that region, and I get the fact that there's concerns and suspicion around any change of law. There certainly was around the legislative effort that was ultimately signed by the governor last year, and there's still some concern around that, and there's some concern around this, because they've been used to operating. They've been essentially lied to by, unfortunately, government officials around this issue, and they've lived under threat of seizure for decades and decades and decades of misinformation. But I think, time for every person we've met where we're greeted with concerns. Ultimately, at the end of that discussion, it was, we want to do this the right way. We want to operate in a legal, open, and regulated marketplace, and we want to do this. We want to work with our local government, and we want to make this work. I mean, they're tired of the constant threat of seizure and violence that's around them, and want to protect their families and earn a livelihood, and so moving this out of the shadows into a legal regulated market, working with state and local government to do this the right way, making sure that everyone from the farmer side all the way to the consumer side are protected, that's really why we do this, and again, it builds on. I mean, I know Andrew said that this is different than what happened last year. We completely rewrote Prop 64 to build on the advances made under medical marijuana by the legislative authors as well as the governor, which is why the lead author in MRSA is supporting Prop 64, because he recognizes that a medical marijuana system only really works if we have a regulated compendium adult use marijuana market. Otherwise, every person in the state who wants to use marijuana will just continue improperly diverting into the medical system. And ultimately, we want to have a system where we treat medical marijuana like what it is, medicine, for patients who really need the help and care and treatment. And adult use marijuana should be regulated for what it is, a substance no different than alcohol.
Well, let me go to Andrew on that, because I think you raised a number of important points. Andrew, I want to give you a chance to weigh in. So specifically on that the black market question, and then if you wanted to respond to any of the other points that Jason was making there.
Well, it's pretty – from the experts that have talked about this, and I think Jason was on a panel not too long ago, most people said black market's not going away. So just to say it's going to happen doesn't make it true. I know Jason and folks that are on his side, you know, shop language around on the initiative to try to make sure that people weren't unhappy with the final product. And from all indications, people are still a little wary of it. I mean, the Growers Association does not support it. There's a lot of environmental groups that aren't supportive. I mean, the Sacramento Bee had an article today talking about where people stand on the measure, and most of the statewide office holders in California, Democratic leaders, are very skeptical, and they're all questioning, is this the right way? Are we handling
that's this a mischaracterization.
Way?
They're neutral. You have Dianne Feinstein's opposed to it, Gavin Newsom's in favor, and the rest are neutral.
Well, that's my point, that there's a lot of people.
Well, you just said they're skeptical. I didn't see any negativity
right
in there. In
so,
fact, I saw a lot of people saying that they liked a lot of what they
Again,
saw, and they're going to be taking
Are we
a position.
Doing this the right way? Are the small farmers going to be taken care of? Unknown. There's one key point that when Gavin Newsom and the ACLU came out with their Blue Ribbon Commission, the first point of this was, do not turn this into the gold rush. If you Google gold rush in marijuana in California, there's 50 articles about people who are looking to make money, buying land, trying to get in on the ground floor, hiring lobbyists in Sacramento, opening campaign committees, because they want to get in here and lock in so they can make sure they get their piece of the pie. Mm-hmm. And that's probably not going to be the small grower up in Humboldt. It's going to be somebody who's looking for a big killing on this initiative. And that's a problem.
Well, let's go to the phone lines. We've got Joanne from San Francisco. So, Joanne, welcome to City Visions.
Oh, thank you so much. I just had to call in and say I think it's a great thing to hear on the radio that they're discussing this. And I think that actually I'm all for – I don't even like marijuana. I don't even smoke it. But I can see that it's probably medically necessary for a lot of people. I don't know what that experience would be like, but I just think that in general that they should regulate things like this besides marijuana as well. I think that it has to be done, and it should have been done a long time ago, all of it, really, because they should have even, I think, they should even have clinics for even, like, meth users, because it's just so dangerous. I mean, all of the things that people do, I'm actually calling from the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and you can see how there's been so many people, you know, dying left and right on the street. They had a constant problem with intravenous use, very, very bad self you know, medical procedure, you know, process, people knowing that that's how they started out, it seems. And they're gradually, like Blythe's got a good program, they're gradually helping to assist, you know, and it's just like a beginning, but I mean, it's going very well. There's a lot of homeless people, but not every one of them has, you know, a drug problem. But I think that everybody in America, in one way or another, has a drug problem in some way, whether or not they actually are using any kinds of drugs. Regardless of even if it's like a prescription, benzos, or you know any number of pharmaceuticals.
Well, I think you're raising some important points, particularly about this issue around dependency. And Patrick Murphy, let me turn it to you. What do we know about marijuana and dependency? Can people become psychologically dependent? Can it be a gateway drug to other drugs?
So, evidence that it can become psychologically dependent, the physical dependency like you find in other substances, is not there or quite a bit different. The gateway drug argument, you can find a lot of literature that would argue that it can. Most of that is because it's very hard to disentangle kind of what comes first, the chicken and the egg. Folks who use harder drugs, or what we'd call harder drugs, turns out they've used marijuana. Is it causal? That's the real tough thing to prove. Those same folks use a lot of things, including alcohol, nicotine, etc.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Joanna, for your call. And Patrick, staying with you, I wanted to ask about cultivation. So in Colorado, each individual plant is tagged, and its path is traced from the nursery to the dispensary. It's called track and trace. Do you know, are they planning to do that kind of thing in California with the cultivation here?
Yeah, in Washington does a similar thing. The idea being that if you are in the legal market, we know the expression being from seed to sale. That you step forward and you say, I've got a license to cultivate. This is what I'm doing. This is how many plants. And then when those plants leave my premises, this is where they went. And we will have records. And this is also started with the regulations around medical marijuana. That so that is started in place, and It sounds a little bit amazing in terms of the technology, but I mean, then when you start thinking about what we can track with technology these days, not that complicated, relatively speaking. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty amazing with GPS what you can do. So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at kalw.org. We're talking about Prop 64 tonight, the measure on this November's ballot to legalize the recreational use of marijuana in California. Please call us, bring us your questions or comments for our program. The number to call is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, or post a comment on kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. We have in studio tonight Patrick Murphy from the Public Policy Institute of California, and joining us by phone from the Yes on Prop 64 campaign is Jason Kinney, and with the No on 64 campaign is Andrew Acosta. So, Jason, let me go to you. We were talking about black markets, but what about illegal drug trade? As opposed to the black market, we have a lot of issues with illegal drugs coming in from Mexico. Could it be that California could wind up exporting even more marijuana to the United States from some of these other areas where it's still illegal?
Well, look, nobody is suggesting that the black market is going to go away overnight. It won't. And California will continue to be an export state in some capacity, regardless of how many resources we devote to it. But that's the point. We're going to be able to redirect resources to making sure that California is complying with the law, not spending time on petty nonviolent marijuana offenses on use and cultivation. And so we're going to be able to really use the, under Prop 64, we're going to be able to redirect those resources to things that matter. And we are going to be able to crack down on black market activity, on illegal grows, on improper water diversion. There is going to be more money invested in cracking down on illegal grows and water diversion under Prop 64 than in the rest of the country combined. And because it's that serious of an issue, and it's why the California Council of Land Trust supports this and other groups. It's a serious issue. It's not going to go away overnight, but it's something that will fundamentally redefine our relationship with our friends along the border. And I will say, if California passes Prop 64, Nevada does their thing, you know, the western states will have created a block of progressive liberalization of marijuana laws, regulated systems. And by the way, I mean, no less than this has the potential of redefining our relationship with Mexico. And that's not me saying that. That is former Reagan Secretary of State George Shultz, who looked at this issue and said, if California creates a legal marijuana structure and really takes a bite out of Mexican cartels and the black market, it could redefine our relationship, and it will undercut or cut their legs out from under them. It's an opportunity. Again, the reason to do this is because there's no reason to continue to criminalize responsible adult behavior. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of ancillary side benefits that are going to make this that are incredibly favorable and will benefit the entire state.
Well, let's go to Andrew Acosta on that question of redefining our relationship with Mexico. You know, there's been so much border violence down there. Andrew, what do you make of Jason's claims around what this proposition might do for that relationship?
I'm just curious. Is George Shultz endorsing the initiative tonight?
He isn't. I have not talked to Secretary Shultz today.
So
I can only tell you what he said a couple months ago.
In California, haven't read the initiative, and if you read the initiative,
so you're attacking George Shultz now? I didn't even say he supports it. I just thought it was odd that you decided to go on a jihad against George Shultz.
Mexico is a little bit different than the initiative before us today, which has a whole bunch of other stuff in it that would allow folks to make money. So I understand what Jason's saying. Clearly, Colorado is still trying to work this out. There has been increased cartel violence and other. They have pot there now, and now they're having other things that are brought with it because you can grow legally. Sex trafficking, other drugs are there. It's a problem. So, as Jason said, it's not going to go away overnight. My point is, let's let Colorado sort of figure this out and do it the right way versus doing it fast, because some folks want to get on the ground floor of the next gold rush of California.
Hold on. The Colorado Department of Public Safety just put out a study that studied very closely incidents of violence in and around legal marijuana dispensaries in Colorado and found no increase
legal,
in violence in and around
illegal activities.
So let's go to the phone lines now. Again, I don't want to cut off the debate, but we got a caller from Vallejo. John, welcome to City Visions.
Oh, hi, everybody. Now, KLW has got to be the... it's only second to, that old Berkeley station, KVFA. Okay, thanks for letting me call in. All right, I have a comment.
Sure, go ahead. We always like to start with a compliment.
Everybody listening to the radio should vote for the legalization. It's going to be up on the November ballot. Okay, here's another thing. All us old people, I'm an old person now, we always had to be so paranoid. Look over our shoulder. Oh, we have a half a joint in our pocket, or we have a roach. Oh, my God. Here's the other thing. It could be such a boon to the not only the tax revenue, but just the peace of mind of all these people that just smoke weed, and you don't want to be illegal. All right. Nice to talk to you. Bye.
All right. Well, you actually raise a question that I think many people have about this initiative, which is that what kind of message does the quote-unquote normalization of marijuana send to teenagers? Have teen usage rates spiked in states where it's been legalized? Patrick Murphy, have you looked into this issue of youth and marijuana if this gets legalized here?
So in the states that have legalized, teen use was already high. And in California, teen use is higher than the rest of the country. So it's the attitudes are already formed. We didn't see any great dramatic jump in either Washington or Colorado as a consequence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to want to go back to other panelists on this issue, but we've got Matt from San Mateo on the line. So, Matt, welcome to City Visions. Matt from we have Matt on the line.
Okay. Yes. Thank you very much.
Sure. What's your question tonight?
My question is, I was concerned about, really prohibiting, and I guess in the state of Washington, but limiting the amount, the quantity of home grow here, because it seems to me that sort of fosters a monopoly, not necessarily of one company, but of various entities with deep pockets, with capital to deal with all that regulation of tagging a plant from get-go. It seems to me that it goes against the whole idea of people being able to produce their own. Whereas alcohol, it's hard to do. You need a distillery or marijuana, you can just grow it on your backyard, and it's the same that you get from the professionals who do it in with a lot of capital.
I
think that goes against one of the good things one could see in this.
I think it's an interesting question. I'd like to turn that over to Jason Kinney on the Yes campaign. Jason, what do you how do you respond to that idea around the prohibition on homegrown cannabis?
Well, I didn't completely follow the question, but first of all, the track and trace requirements, which are serious, but are the exact same track and trace requirements that the legislature and the governor implemented under medical marijuana, the agricultural inspection requirements, the quality control and the commercial inspections, those are all completely related to commercial activity, commercial grows, commercial sales. In terms of personal cultivation, your right to grow up to six plants, and this is where we struck a balance. We looked at what other states have done. We brought in experts from around the country. The idea here was to decriminalize personal use and to decriminalize personal cultivation in the privacy of your own home out of public view. But at the same time, we didn't want to create incentives for people. This is a supply and demand balancing act, right? If we have too much supply, then people that shouldn't get marijuana are going to get marijuana. If we have too much demand, prices are going to go up and the black market will flourish again.
Well,
and so what we don't want to have happen is personal cultivation to bleed into illegal commercial use.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial activity should only be done by those folks who are licensed, overseen by the state and by their local governments, and so that both growers, transporters, consumers, everybody knows what the products are, and make sure that people are protected.
And Andrew, I'd like to give you a chance to respond to that. It sounds like you wanted to jump in there.
Actually, it wasn't me, but I'll jump in.
Okay.
So there's three things. One is what is the impact on the neighborhoods? As if an area, if let's say the city of Sacramento allows it, allows cultivation, allows dispensaries, what you've seen in Denver is that it pushes it into the poorer areas, and there's been a couple of pretty damning articles that have come out to talk about what has happened to those areas. There was a activist in Denver who said, we thought we were going to get rid of the drug dealers, they've been replaced with new drug dealers. And, the cultivation happens in areas that are zoned that end up being in the poorer communities. So, what is that impact? How's that going to look? Again, I think some of this is still working itself out, and it doesn't seem like the Colorado folks have gotten their hands around it. And going back a little bit to this teen usage piece, I mean, what we've seen is the high THC levels that the kids are smoking. This is high-grade marijuana. This is like, these people are putting marijuana on the street because they want to sell a really good product. And selling a really good product ends up having very high THC levels, which can really knock someone out, and especially younger people who are using this. So is it sending a bad message? Are rates going, are usage rates going up? Still, they weren't tracking them as much before those places legalized, so we'll see this as it goes over time. But what the impact is, I mean, I know there's already communities in Colorado who want to opt out of legal marijuana because they've seen impacts in babies coming in with high THC levels from their mother. I mean, that stuff is concerning, should be concerning to all of us, which is why one of the reasons why the Hospital Association is opposed.
Mm-hmm. So you're listening to City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. We're talking about Prop 64 tonight, the measure on this November's ballot to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. We'd love to hear your questions or comments, so please do call and join the conversation at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on kalw.org or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. We've got Patrick Murphy from the Public Policy Institute of California joining us here in studio, and Jason Kinney with the Yes on 64 campaign, and Andrew Acosta, with the No on 64 campaign joining us by phone. Let's go back to the phone lines now. We have Claudia from El Sobrante. So, Claudia, welcome to City Visions.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to address the whole idea of marijuana being a gateway drug. I'm 71 years old, and I was a very active participant in the counterculture. I lived in communes, some of which I started, for at least 13 years. And in all that time, I met only one person who used heroin. And that person was basically thrown out of the commune. Nobody wanted anything to do with him. There was a big distinction in everybody's mind that marijuana was something that would heighten the beauty of reality. It was used for artwork. It was used for lovemaking. It was used in a positive way. Heroin wiped a person out and was deadly. And we wanted nothing to do with it. So I don't know where the idea came from about marijuana being a gateway drug. I mean, it's not really a fact. President Clinton would have been injecting heroin by now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and thank you very much for the comment. And we have talked a bit about the dependency risk there. And I suppose it goes to a question of productivity to some extent. Patrick, how do you think this will affect the productivity of Californians in any way? The governor somewhat famously said, we need people in the state to be alert, and what didn't seem to be particularly enthused about this measure. Have you looked into this issue?
We haven't. The only information I know of about the impact of marijuana on productivity is the fact that when we were, less so now in California, but nationwide, arresting a lot of people in terms of marijuana and putting them in jail or prison, there was a pretty significant loss productivity of those were people who are now incapacitated and they can't participate in any economy. The idea that somehow people are less motivated and therefore less likely to go to work. If someone were to embark on that, I would also ask, you should include alcohol as well, because that has similar effects on it. I would say have effects on productivity as well.
Mm-hmm. And let's go back to the phone lines. We have Ken from Hayward. Ken, welcome.
Yeah, I'm interested in deregulation, decriminalization versus regulation. Why are we going more toward regulation rather than just decriminalization?
Well, I think that would be an interesting question for Jason Kinney on the Yes on 64 campaign. So why have all these, you know, complicated restrictions? Why not just simply decriminalize it?
Yeah, and it's a good question. First of all, let me talk about the productivity issue, because you say there's no studies, Patrick, and I think that's true. But interestingly, the Journal of Health Economics put out analysis today analyzing the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers and have looked at states that have medical marijuana systems and found a decrease in absenteeism from work due to health issues after the passage of medical marijuana laws, which would seem to run counter to the notion that somehow it creates a slacker community. In terms of why do we need specificity? Because Californians don't want, as much as we cherish and respect our leadership on what we viewed as a fundamental issue around medical marijuana in Prop 215, it took 20 years for the state legislature and the governor to come together smartly, boldly, in a bipartisan fashion and set very clear regulations about how that system's going to work. Another lesson from Washington and from Oregon and from Colorado is you can't spend a long period of lag time from legalization until you have a structure in place to figure out, to let people know, and to make sure that people know that they can access this product in a safe, regulated manner. People want to know, they have questions, and they want to know, how are commercial activities going to be regulated, right? How are we going to know these products are safe? How do we know that they're going to be grown in a way that's agriculturally sound, environmentally sound, that protects our water? And so that's why it took some time to do this right. This was the product, Prop 64 is the product of 18 months, hundreds of groups, thousands of individuals, experts coming together, not to mention a statewide expert panel that kind of came together to write all these things. Mm-hmm. And it's because people want specificity. It took so long to figure out how to make Prop 215 work that people want to know that if we're going to do it, we're going to do it the right way. And they're going to have some sense of some certainty around how it's going to work.
So, Ken, I hope that answered your question. Thanks so much for calling in with that. We now have an email from Laura, who wants to know, what is the public opinion currently on Prop 64 and on legalization? Andrew Acosta, have you? I assume you're monitoring somewhat what the polls are saying and what the potential future success or failure of this ballot measure
sure.
might be.
Well, I mean, there's obviously public polls out there on the concept of legalization, which is different than, again, what we're discussing today. You know, we had done some earlier research on what the actual ballot language would look like, and you know, voters are supportive, but they're not over. It's not overwhelming, and there's a lot of people who have questions, and you know, Jason and I have had many discussions about some of the pieces of the initiative, including a piece that was put in the initiative that would allow for television advertising. And as Jason said, this initiative went through many, many rounds of review from obviously many people, including, I'm sure, some of the donors who were behind the initiative. And some of the pieces that ended up in there were, again, business decisions, not regulatory decisions to protect kids. So that's part of the problem with this initiative is it clearly there's been a lot of people talking about it, but what came out of it is more, you know, everyone getting together drawing a horse and we got a camel in front of us. So, and those are the pieces that we're very concerned about.
So let's go to Linda from San Lorenzo on the phones. Linda, you're on City Visions. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, good evening. I'm really happy that this conversation is going on. You know, I'm a long-time pot smoker. I took a big fat break when I had kids, and I kind of filtered back into it a little bit. I'm in my late 50s, started when I was a teenager. I work in healthcare. I work in an acute care hospital, and I see real drug addicts all the time, and I treat them in the emergency room and on the medical floors, and none of them are marijuana junkies, none of them. So we got to put the kibosh on, is it a gateway drug? No, it is not. Mm-hmm. And I'm living proof of that, and so are a ton of people that I know that partake. And, you know, I think my biggest issue around this whole thing that's been going on and on and on in our state and other states, and it's the federal, you know, big brother looking down on us. No matter what the state says, there's still this big overriding looming thing that causes us to wonder if it's really going to be okay. So even when the states do legalize, you mentioned it earlier, Humboldt County is always being oppressed by the idea that they're going to be under siege and they're blah, blah. And I just, it's so time to make this correct, you know, to allow people, just like alcohol, to participate in adult activity at their own discretion. And it's about time.
Well, thank you, Linda, for calling in with your experience there. And you bring up, you know, hospital visits. I'd like to ask Patrick, what has the experience been in Colorado, maybe in other states, about ER visits in particular? Have they increased, particularly in response to the consumption of edibles? I remember as Maureen Dowd in the New York Times kind of famously had this overdose on marijuana where she kind of had a panic attack in her hotel room after ingesting some edibles. Is that sort of a rise in frequency out in other states that have legalized it?
So there's been some increase. There's been some increase of in Colorado of reported, when I say increase, of a small number of kids who ended up in emergency rooms because of edibles. The problem is the baseline. What do we compare it to? And is that up? Is that down? And is that different? So it's not unlike the stops on the highway, where in both Washington and Colorado we've seen both of those go up. But is it because more people are being stopped and more people are being tested because the patrol officer now is more attuned and aware of it, or is it because more people are out on the roads?
And I want to go to another issue that doesn't get talked about so much, but it's certainly near and dear to my heart, which is the environmental effect. You know, we have a lot of illegal cultivation going on that has huge impacts on our water quality, water diversions. We also have a lot of indoor grow operations that are using up a lot of essentially unregulated type of electricity. Patrick, just staying with you, what do you see as some of the safeguards, perhaps, or the upsides or downsides of legalizing, perhaps legalizing cannabis with respect to environmental impacts?
So is Jason noted, there's provisions in the proposition. There was provisions put in terms of the medical regulations, and I would flag that is one thing that's unique. I mean, that doesn't exist in Washington or Colorado. That's something that California has taken very seriously because it's a very serious problem.
And Andrew, as a representative of the No campaign, how do you respond to the current situation we have with the environmental impacts and the potential upside of this approach, where we might be able to, you know, hopefully better manage the water and energy impacts of grow operations?
Well, like I said earlier, I mean, it's clearly a problem. The initiative does put money out there to try to address it, but, you know, the Sierra Club hasn't endorsed this initiative. There's plenty of environmental groups who are not that excited about what they see coming down the line. And again, what does it mean for the energy usage, for water usage of indoor grows, illegal grows? Is it all going to go away overnight? Is it going to be, you know, what is the energy usage and water usage of these new grows that are going to come online in 5 years? They're going to be unlimited. They're going to be huge grows. So we don't know yet. And I think that's definitely something that should concern us. And then just to jump back a step, you know, the last caller talked about being a mom and stopping smoking pot and, you know, the gateway thing. One of the things that does concern me as a parent is the ability under this initiative to allow for home delivery of marijuana products. And it's not just, you know, pot versus the pizza, which you can go online and Google that on YouTube, and you can see who gets their product first, pot or pizza, which might sound funny, but for some of us parents, I don't think we want a car full of marijuana products driving through our neighborhood with an all-cash business that, you know, the driver has stops a block from your house, gets the product out, puts it in a white bag, drives to your door, and you give them $50. That's concerning. They don't allow that in Colorado. They don't allow that in Washington. And I think that's a piece of the initiative that definitely got slipped in there because somebody wanted to make a lot of money. And that's one of the reasons why you have some backers who are putting $1 million into this, because they see this as a market share.
So let's go to the phone lines. We just have a couple minutes left. Tom from Oakland, welcome to City Visions.
Thank you. I wonder if there's any provision in this for drug testing, because this is going to make recreational use prevalent, I would think. But meanwhile, there'll be this other sanction potentially hanging over people that is not present for alcohol. So there's my question.
Well, that's a great question, Tom. Thank you. Why don't I turn that to you, Patrick? Is there a provision in here about drug testing for jobs?
doesn't prohibit employers from having their policies.
And I guess a related question I have in terms of driving while impaired, this seems like a major public safety concern. What do you see as how that might play out?
And one of the one of the big issues with the whole driving while impaired is states have put in what they call PARA-SAE laws, a test for how much THC is in your blood. And the people doing the tests will tell you that doesn't really tell you whether or not the driver is impaired. And so figuring that piece out is significant. The proposition right now will devote money to do that, as well as training officers so that they can go through, have a process and the technology they need to detect.
And we just have about a minute left or so, but Jason Kinney, I want to leave you with the last word. If Prop 64 passes, what do you think will be next? Is it going to take 20 years to regulate the recreational use like we saw with medicinal? What do you see as a sort of unfolding steps after Prop 64 if it passes?
No, it won't. It will be, and this is where we have the benefit of the hard bipartisan work of this legislature and this governor in creating a medical marijuana framework that we were able to build this on. These two, Prop 64 and what was called MRSA, are going to operate in tandem, and they're going to be built up over a couple of years. Yes, there's going to be there's going to be a little bit of time for regulators to make sure they're doing it right. They need to evaluate supply and demand. They need to make sure that communities are being protected. They need to make sure that there's not that there isn't this big business takeover that the opposition wants to scare you about. But we empower regulators 100% to make the decisions what's in the best interest of both public health and public safety. And it will take time to kind of reach that perfect balance. And it's going to be an organic process. It's not something that's going to happen in one election, which is why Prop 64 gives so much flexibility to both the legislature and regulators to make decisions as we go to improve. We took a lot of the lessons of Colorado. We talked about edible and overdoses. Our Prop 64 bans candies that look like that are uniquely attractive to children, because we learned that from Colorado. We fix those problems, but there's going to be other things that come up, unintended consequences that we want to fix as we go. So we start with a benchmark of we're not going to criminalize responsible behavior. We're going to offset the impacts of this billion-dollar industry that already exists, and then we're going to improve as we go.
All right,
and that's the best way to create a gold standard for the rest of the country in terms of regulation.
Well, that's going to have to be the last word tonight. Certainly not the last word on this initiative. We'll find out what happens in November, but that's City Visions for this evening. My guests have been Patrick Murphy, Director of Research and Senior Fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California and co-author of the 2016 report, Regulating Marijuana in California. Joining us on the phone was Jason Kinney with the Yes on Prop 64 campaign and Principal of California Strategies. And also joining by phone has been Andrew Acosta with the No on 64 campaign, who's founder and president of Acosta Consulting. Thank you all for joining me this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Ann Harper. Join us next time on City Visions. This is Ethan Elkind. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week.
While some French towns